98.7 FM, Arizona's sports station. Burns and Gambo starts now.
Straight up, 2 o'clock on this Friday in Phoenix. Jordan Bird filling in for the vacationing day Burns.
This time is true.
How many times have I said that this year?
We could just record you saying that and have it
just
in our archives.
Just
every week or so.
Yeah, Burnsy's off today. Something. He's on some private jet somewhere going some trip that his wife's on or something.
Yeah, he's hobnobbing it this week.
I think he's hobnobbing it. Yeah, he might get dapped somewhere along the line being on that private jet.
Well done.
Burnsy might get dapped by somebody. He might be
walking by, bro. You better dap me up.
Yeah. Some champagne, somebody walks over, daps him up, sitting on that private jet. So, Burnsy's off today, and boy, he always misses something big, right? So, we got a Suns win to talk about, and we got a brawl. I mean, we've got a legitimate brawl in the National Football League. The punishments have come down. So, that is what we will start with. Let's tell you what we are going deep with.
Burns and Gambo, the weigh-in. Brought to you by 3010 Weight Loss for Life.
All right, let's not waste any time. I watched the Suns game last night. I didn't see this live. I was hearing about it. I'm like, okay, I got to go look. And then I watched it. I'm like, oh, my God. Almost reminded me of the melee with Ron Artest and the Pacers. And, I mean, Myles Garrett slamming a helmet on Mason Rudolph. And just, I mean, all hell broke loose for a little while. And Pouncey comes to his rescue, and DeCastro's there, and listen, those things are ugly, right? I mean, people could get hurt. I mean, you're kicking guys, you're punching guys in a helmet, and that's not an easy thing to do, to punch somebody in a helmet. That, you know, that hurts.
I've always never got that one.
Because your emotions get the best of you, you punch anything. I mean, I punched trees, walls. I mean, I just...
Yeah, but
anything. When your emotion gets, you don't think, right? You lose your mind for a second. Trust me, I've been there. You lose your mind for a second, and you don't think, "Oh, I'm going to punch you." You don't care about the fact you're going to break your hand, or you don't think about that. It's emotions taking over. It's like, well, I can't wait for this guy. Can you take your helmet off so I can punch you in the face?
Well, no, but I'm saying if you're going to punch someone or if you're going to hit someone who's in a football uniform, go for the midsection where there's no padding or protection.
Or the neck.
Yeah, don't go after a guy who's wearing a plastic helmet. So there's so much to unravel here with this one. I mean...
There is. Let's just start with the Browns beat the Steelers, and that's not the story of the game, right? The Browns, you know, they hadn't beat the Steelers since 2014. The game was, you had OBJ yawning at Tomlin and Jarvis Landry yawning, you know, the fake yawns based on what Tomlin said after the Cleveland got all those guys. Players got hurt. Juju got hurt. Helmet-to-helmet hit. But then with 10 seconds left in the game, the Steelers are down 21-7. It's a 3rd and 29, and that's when all hell broke loose, right? Mason Rudolph throws a pass. The cameras are looking at that, and meanwhile, you've got Myles Garrett. He gets in a tangle with Rudolph. Rudolph looks like he kicks him in the private area.
Even before
tries to
that,
take his helmet off.
Yes, that's what started it. Was Rudolph trying to take the helmet off of Garrett?
Listen, I'm going to say this now. Rudolph should be suspended. Mason Rudolph should be suspended. This is why I hate Roger Goodell. I do. I hate Roger Goodell. Mason Rudolph, he's not suspended?
He's being fined, but no suspension.
Why? But why? Like, did he not instigate it? Did he not have anything to do with it?
It certainly looked like he was the instigator.
Did he try to rip Myles Garrett's helmet off, yes or no?
Yes.
Did he kick him in the private parts? I don't understand why Mason Rudolph isn't suspended. And I'm going to tell you, and I know you disagree with this, I think Goodell's the worst commissioner in our lifetime. I do. I think he's gutless. I think he's a gutless coward. It's an indefinite suspension. Why? Make a decision. I guarantee you when all these other commissioners make decisions, they make a decision. When the Astros get punished, there'll be a decision on the Astros getting punished. When Major League Baseball, you know, suspends somebody, here it is. He's suspended. The NBA suspended DeAndre Ayton 25 games. College, 25 games. You know what? I'm going to try to see how Twitter reacts, and I'm going to see what people think. So it's indefinite for now, and then we'll kind of see, because I'm not really sure, because I'm so indecisive, I never know what I'm doing. You could say what you want about the it's indefinite. It's definitely for the rest of this year.
Well, and to me, that's the key. Yeah. So, I mean, okay.
But what's wrong with a 15-game suspension? You're suspended this year and all of next year.
I like having it indefinite because now the NFL can assess this situation moving forward. How does Myles Garrett handle himself from this point on?
Why isn't it assessed beforehand? Like, you should know.
Because it's been less than 24 hours. You want to make a rash decision in less than 24 hours without talking to all the parties involved? You don't want to talk to Myles Garrett and understand maybe why he did this?
I don't need to understand. You did it. I mean... I need to understand. You took your helmet and you slammed it on a guy's head. I mean, you could have killed the guy. I mean, it's like you got to have penalties and punishments.
I agree.
Sleep on it. Talk to some people in the morning. If you needed an extra day to come out, nothing's happening today. You want to talk to people? Listen, we're going to evaluate this. We'll have a decision in 48 hours. I'll respect that. We're going to talk to all parties involved. We'll have a decision in 48 hours. And then said we've suspended him for this year and next year. We've suspended him for 10 total games. 10 total games. Just something. I just think that he's always indecisive, Roger Goodell. Always. I don't understand how Pouncey suspended 3 games for coming to the defense of his quarterback.
The guy was kicking players on a football field.
Sure, I agree. Get him suspended for a game. But, man, that's like you have to do that. You have no choice if you're Pouncey. Can you imagine if you don't stick up for your quarterback? You're going to look like the biggest joke in the world.
Yeah, but there's a middle ground there between sticking up for your teammate and kick stomping a guy on a football field. There is a middle ground there.
Hit your quarterback over the head with a helmet.
Using that type of logic, if I have a family member who was murdered, then I can go out and murder that person who murdered my family.
You know, sometimes that happens.
Well, yeah, it does, but that doesn't make it right. It doesn't make it right. There are laws and there are procedures in place.
Do you think that hasn't happened? Because it has.
Well, yeah, but I'm not saying that it makes it right.
Insanity. You lost your mind. You were devastated. Look, in that Pouncey, here's what I don't like about the punishments. One, Rudolph should have been suspended.
Agreed.
Two, Pouncey shouldn't have been suspended 3 games. And three, I want a definitive answer on how many games Myles Garrett has. I don't need an indefinite thing. If you need more time to figure it out, then figure it out.
He is already being suspended for the rest of this season, and if by chance somehow Cleveland makes the playoffs. So if the NFL came out today and said, Myles Garrett is suspended for the rest of this season and the playoffs, period, end of story. That would suffice for you? Because the way that they have ruled, he's going to be suspended probably longer than this season. But by your calculation, if it had to be done today, then
he could end today.
Well, but that's what you're kind of saying. A definitive answer one way or the other.
But listen, come out and say, listen, we're going to evaluate it. We're going to talk to all the parties involved. And you don't have to make a decision.
That's what
today.
An indefinite suspension is.
It's Friday. You don't have to make any decision. These teams aren't playing again until next Sunday. Neither one of them.
Can you at least respect, Gambo, that Goodell is taking a measured approach and saying, man, this is a precedent that we're about to set with this decision for the rest of the league?
I mean, listen,
let's really think this through.
Look, there's no question that this is the largest ban in NFL history. Albert Haynesworth got 5 games for stomping on somebody's head. I just think that it shows indecisiveness. Okay, this is my opinion. It shows indecisiveness. Like, I don't really know what I want to do yet. I want to think it out. Like, you've got to, like, have this, like, talk to your people, come up with a decision. Concrete, you're suspended for this many games.
But
a guy goes to in front of a judge, and you know what? I'm going to send you in jail, but I really don't know how long I'm going to put you in jail for. So just go now, and I'll figure it out in 3 months.
There is a thing called probation.
Exactly. You can get out on good behavior.
Yeah, you can have your sentence reduced, which is exactly why I like the fact that the NFL left the door open. Because taking it from here, if Myles Garrett does all of the correct steps, then all right, maybe he's suspended for the rest of this year in the playoffs, which he already is, and maybe he has a couple of games added on at the beginning of next year. If he doesn't...
What correct steps does he need to take?
You did it.
It's done. It's over with. You want to show remorse? Show remorse. But you did it.
Your biggest argument out of last night
Rudolph wasn't suspended.
Okay.
Pouncey was suspended too long. And I want a clear indication of how long Myles Garrett's going to be out for. That's me. But I've never liked Roger Goodell. So it's almost like that, you know.
And I'm not a fan either.
I just don't like Roger Goodell. I think he's a phony.
I'm tending to agree with Sarah on this. You even mentioned it in the beginning. This is malice at the palace type level of insubordination going on in your league.
Okay.
You're going to want to allow some flexibility in the punishments that come down to not only establish a precedent, but also set the parameters moving forward if, God forbid, something like this happens again down the road. This is a monumental event in the NFL.
Okay,
so for me, they've already acted. Myles Garrett is done the rest of the year. But they're also, depending on the severity of this, after looking at it a little bit longer.
Let me just explain to you that this is why I don't like it, okay? And maybe this will give you some indication of, and again, you don't have to agree with me.
Yeah,
you have
fair enough, your
opinion. The malice at the palace between Detroit and Indiana, okay?
Mm-hmm.
After the game, the NBA suspended 9 players for a total of 146 games, leading to the players losing $11 million. 5 players were charged with assault, eventually sentenced to a year of probation community service. 5 fans faced criminal charges. So you can go and you can literally look at the altercation, you could watch it, and you could see that the NBA acted swiftly. Swiftly.
But what was the date on that? When was those suspensions handed down? Because the malice at the palace, I'm looking it up right now, November 19th, 2004.
Steven Jackson was suspended for 30 games. Jermaine O'Neal for 25.
Well, and to your point, as I'm looking it up here, the NBA suspended them on November 20th, the next day.
Right. That's,
indefinitely.
But that's
the
a NBA, real commissioner.
The NBA suspended Artest, Jackson, O'Neal, and Wallace indefinitely, and then it wasn't until...
How long later?
I don't know. I'm trying to look here. But initially, they were suspended indefinitely. However, it wasn't until December that these suspensions were actually placed.
How much later is that?
A month and a half.
Or a month and a half later?
Or at least 4 weeks, yeah. November 20th is when they were suspended indefinitely. December 24th, a judge ruled that O'Neal was allowed to play, so it went through some process.
All right, so it went through a process.
Yeah.
Okay. Jackson got suspended for 30, Jermaine O'Neal for 25. Ben Wallace got 6 games. Anthony Johnson got 5 games. 4 players were suspended for a game apiece. Reggie Miller, Chauncey Billups, Eldon Campbell, Derek Coleman. All the suspensions were without pay. And it's, you know, I like just swift, okay, here it is. This is the amount of games you're suspended by. But that was crazy last night. It was, in some ways, in a roundabout way, the Cardinals are going to play these teams without some of these guys. Pouncey's not going to play against the Arizona Cardinals. Myles Garrett's not going to play against the Arizona Cardinals. Cardinals have these teams coming up in the next 3 games.
Yep.
Both Cleveland and Pittsburgh are coming up, and they're not going to have to face these guys.
The other thing that's funny about, or I shouldn't say funny, but the interesting factor of this, these two teams play each other in 16 days. December 1st is when Pittsburgh and Cleveland play each other again. So that's a quick turnaround with this much animosity on the table.
Yeah, and players will be out. The Phoenix Suns took on the Atlanta Hawks last night, and one player shined above everybody else. We'll talk about that next on 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station. All right, before we talk about the Suns, we're going to talk about the Suns' big win last night in a second. Jordan found something. Kind of backs up my point of why I don't like Roger Goodell. Because if you go to the malice in the palace, it is very true that David Stern immediately knew exactly how many games he's going to suspend everybody for. Exactly. Well, within 24 hours, he suspended all of those players a total of 140 games. Right?
It was within 2 days.
Within 48 hours.
Yes.
And go ahead, read that line right there that you
said. This was from an article back, when these suspensions were going down in 2004. Quote, David Stern took the unusual step of calling a news conference at Madison Square Garden before the Knicks-Cavaliers game to announce the suspensions, blah, 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 blah.
Right.
So he held a press conference
specifically
to announce the suspensions.
Yeah, this clown that we have running the NFL would probably never do anything like that. And that's what I'm saying. David Stern was, and people hate him here for the Spurs stuff. But it didn't take him long. He came out. He held a press conference. He announced the suspensions. And here's what it is: you're suspended 30 games. You're suspended 25 games. You're suspended 5 games. You're suspended 1 game. You're suspended for the rest of the season. I don't like the indecisiveness with Goodell. That's my opinion. And I think he needs to be strong. I think he needs to, you need to know how many games you're suspending this guy. He clobbered a guy over the head with the helmet. You want us to see, indecisiveness is indefinitely is, well, he could be suspended just this season, but he could be suspended all the next season. I mean, it literally could be a 5-game suspension or a 10-game suspension or a 20-game suspension or a 30-game suspension or a lifetime ban. We have no idea. And that's what I don't like. I want an idea. You're the damn commissioner of the league. David Stern showed strength, and David Stern immediately had a press conference and immediately
levied those fines and those suspensions right away. He didn't need to wait a month to figure it out. All right, let's
drops it off low. The ball's knocked away. Suns pick it up. They get it out to Cam Johnson, to Kelly Oubre for three. Suzanne! Oh, brother! Suns finally get a closing period shot, something they haven't done for a while, and this time it's Kelly Oubre with a trio. Oh, brother!
Kelly Oubre last night. Suns take care of the Hawks. Listen, it's a good win. 128-112. Good response after losing to the Lakers. And Kelly Oubre, who had to sit out a lot of that game in the second half because he wasn't playing well, was the star last night. Nothing better than the buzzer beater to end the third quarter. He had a great third quarter. The Suns put the game away. 37 points for the Suns in the third quarter. They turned a 6-point lead into a 14-point lead, and they put that team away. And that's what I loved about that. That's what I like about this Suns team. The ability to put teams away. And Oubre was fantastic last night. Big baskets in that third quarter. Helped him put the game away. He had a driving layup. He hit free throws. He hit the three at the end. He had a left-handed dunk when he drove the middle, and he dunked it with his left hand. Terrific game for Kelly Oubre. Good bounce back game.
And to me, it speaks to the accountability that is now within this Phoenix Suns organization, because there's no question that Kelly Oubre had a bad performance, a down game against the Lakers, and he was held accountable for it. He was brought out of that game. They were playing other players at the wing spot instead of him against the Lakers. So with these players, these young, hungry players, how do they react to it? By stepping their game up. And it was really refreshing to see Kelly Oubre. And to another extent, I know you had it in your email, the Phoenix Suns have yet to go on a losing streak yet this season.
No, I love the ability to bounce back after a loss. Listen, for us to believe that the Phoenix Suns have a shot at the playoffs, got to win games like last night. You're home against the Hawks. They got some talent, but they're not a good team.
They were shorthanded to begin with.
Shorthanded, and then they got guys getting tossed out. Alex Brembry got ejected. He had back-to-back tech fouls. He blocked that shot by Rubio, and then goes over there and starts taunting him. Like, what are you doing? He's like I'm surprised he didn't get an elbow to the head. And then Cam Reddish got ejected in the fourth quarter. He had that flagrant on Baines, an elbow right to the face. So Cam gets ejected, Reddish. Alex Bembry gets ejected. They're already shorthanded. And, Trae Young was held in check. I thought the Suns did a good job holding Trae Young in check.
That was the interesting thing after the game. Kelly Oubre talking with the media. He was asked, what was the key to the win last night?
I mean, first half, it was a dogfight. We kind of, we could have been a little bit more locked in as far as defensively. Trae Young is a phenomenal talent, man. And, he was the key to the game tonight. And he had a really good first half. Second half, only had 4 points, so that was pretty much the key.
That's another thing when you look at these opposing stars that have been coming in and playing the Phoenix during this homestand. I think of the Brooklyn game as well. Kyrie Irving
shut down.
He was shut down. Yeah. Trae Young, coming off a, 42-point performance against the Denver Nuggets, he was shut down.
You'd rather have somebody else beat you than Kyrie Irving or Trae Young. Smart basketball. Teams play the Suns, it's the same thing. The Lakers had the same plan. Booker did not have a great game against the Lakers. He was okay. Mm-hmm. But their plan was to double Booker, trap Booker, and let Baines shoot threes and Kaminsky shoot threes. They're like, I'd rather those guys shoot than Booker.
But playing smart basketball and having smart basketball strategy is something that hasn't been the norm around here. It's still new for me to wrap my head around that this team, the further we get game by game by game, it makes you believe that this team is legit, that this team is sustainable. And at this point, I know you've talked before about, even before the season, 15 games, 20 games. I think we have our answer that this is going to be consistent, maybe not the wins, maybe not the win-loss record, but this level of play, this energy is going to be consistent.
So what are they now? They're
7-4,
3 games above 500. So if I asked you right now, do you think at any point this season the Phoenix Suns will be below 500?
I would say no.
You would say no?
I would say no. Right
they've
now,
got a 3-game lead right now.
I know.
So they'd have to lose 4 games in a row right now to be under 500.
And maybe it's because I'm drinking the Kool-Aid in the moment, but think about this 11-game stretch to begin this season. You've had some tough competition.
Sure.
You've played some of the best teams in the Western Conference. You have the best team in the Eastern Conference coming up on Monday night. I don't see them losing 3-4 straight games. Now, will they be...
If they could build it up to 5, 6, 7 games over 500, then you're probably going to be like, you know what? They're not... Like, Right now with three, it's hard to say.
It's a fine line. It's a thin margin.
If you get to six games over 500, seven games over 500, then it's going to be like, yeah, I don't know that they're going to finish with at least 41 wins.
Well, and then the other,
and then at that point, you're starting to think, okay, somewhere between 41 and 50, you're right there on the verge of making the playoffs. So that's what a lot of it depends on. Like, you know, when you look at the schedule going forward, do you see a big losing streak there? Is there something where they're going to drop five out of six and drop them below 500? That's why I looked at it in a 10-game block. The first 10-game block, they went 6-4. The second 10-game block, they already 1-0. First 10 games is over. Let's look at the second 10 games. After the second 10-game block, there's no doubt we should know what the Phoenix Suns are. Barring injury, we should know what they are.
I'm glad you said that because you took the words right out of my mouth. Without an unforeseen injury coming down the pipe, an injury to Ricky Rubio or Devin Booker or even something like Aaron Baines at the moment, I just don't see them going on the type of losing streak it would take for them to all of a sudden find themselves sub 500. And maybe it's the Kool-Aid drinking. We're only 11 games in, but I think we've seen enough of a sample size and we've seen enough of a consistent performance against tough competition, against bad competition, that I think this is real and it's here to stay.
And give Frank Kaminsky credit last night. Again, I mean, Frank Kaminsky's finding his shot. He's going to be one of those guys that I think he's hot and cold, but when his shots fall and he's got a lot of confidence, he was able to chip in and hit some big shots. No doubt about it. So Kaminsky played well.
Dario
Saric
played
well. Dario Saric had a big game. Overall, solid game. Good win for the Suns. The Boston Celtics come to town on Monday. This player has transformed the Phoenix Suns. The Ringer did a story on him. We'll tell you about that next on 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station.
The Burns and Gambo Need to Know Twitter poll, presented by Sanderson Ford.
All right, Sanderson Ford has their big Operation Santa Claus event going on right now where you can win an F-150 or a Lincoln MKZ. Go online at sandersonford.com for more info. But they do our Twitter poll, and we've got a good one today. What is it, Sarah?
Yes, indeed we do. All right, we're talking Suns for a second. Through 11 games, which you guys were just talking about, who has been your MVP for the Phoenix Suns? Four options: Ricky Rubio, Aaron Baines, Devin Booker, or the head coach, Monty Williams.
As someone pointed out on Twitter, you can't go wrong.
Yeah. And what a great problem to have.
I don't want to go the coach. I want to go a player.
That's fair.
I'll go Baines.
I'm going to go with the coach. I'm going to go with Monty because I think it's a trickle-down effect, the culture he's creating.
But coaches don't win MVP awards.
Well, no, but maybe it's the most valuable person and not player.
Yeah. I'll go Baines.
Okay.
I'm going Monty.
You're going Monty. All right. Well, 37% of our votes are with Devin Booker. No surprise there. 30% went with Monty Williams, 19% for Aaron Baines, and a surprisingly low 13% for Ricky Rubio.
Interesting.
Just because there were so many other good options.
Well, we might change that 13% up a little bit with what was written. I don't even want to say written. It was a video on The Ringer today by a guy named Kyle Mann. And it was a story on the Suns, and I had to listen to it instead of read it. But it talked about how Ricky Rubio has transformed the Phoenix Suns.
Through 10 games, Phoenix is creating the second most wide open shots in the NBA.
They were 28th last season.
They're also leading the league in team assists, which is up from 20th last season. Phoenix is shooting out of the ball, and this is likely a big reason why. Scheme and philosophy will always play a part, but if you severely lack playmaking and creation the way the Suns have in the past few seasons, it doesn't matter what you run. You're still going to have a hard time moving the ball.
All right, so that's Kyle Mann. There's a couple cuts here we want to play for you. The thing that stood out about that, the Phoenix Suns have garnered the second most wide open shots in the NBA. Last year they were 28th. Wide open shots. This is where they're talking about Rubio, how he's transformed the Suns, the positive impact that he's had on the Suns' offense. Second most wide open shots in the NBA compared to 28th last season. Guys in the NBA that are pros, you give them a wide open shot, most of the time they're going to knock it down, or they have a much better chance of knocking it down compared to contested shots. All right, here's what else they said.
His playmaking allows Phoenix's individual offensive talents to thrive, and it motivates them to move without the ball. The placement, the patience to set up the passes with fakes, the angles, Rubio can put it where it needs to be. He can comfortably create with a live dribble and use his eyes to manipulate defenders.
And they were showing plays where he could be looking all the way to his left and throw a ball to the right corner and the whole defense is tricked out.
Or with his dribbling, just hesitate a half second and it completely puts a defensive player out of position.
Right. So that was one. And here's the third one, and then we'll talk about some of the things he's saying.
Although everyone is reaping the benefits, one of the biggest beneficiaries from Rubio's presence is Devin Booker, because it allows him to mix up his scoring looks. Through 10 games, Booker's unassisted field goals are down dramatically from last season, from 64% in 2018-19 to 44.1% in 2019-20.
I can't emphasize enough the importance of that statistic right there. Booker's unassisted field goals down from 64 to 44%.
That's crazy.
Unassisted.
20%.
That is a huge number that can't be overlooked. What does it tell you? That Ricky Rubio is getting guys open looks, getting guys easy baskets, and that guys don't have to go isolation one-on-one, create for themselves, beat guys off the dribble, and force up shots to get their baskets.
And specifically for Booker, it means he doesn't have to work as hard.
Work as exactly.
Where that energy can be utilized on the defensive end a little bit.
And every year he's been here, it's been isolation one-on-one. There hasn't been guys that could get him easy looks and easy baskets. And this is what we're seeing with Ricky Rubio. The positive impact that he's had. Now, they talk about how Monty, how he's preached a 0.5-second approach. You got to make a decision in that time frame. What are you going to do? Are you going to shoot? You're going to pass? What are you going to do? But Rubio has really allowed this offense to thrive. And he does it in some ways, he does it quietly, right? Because he's not going to be the leading scorer. He's not Nash. He's not going to be the leading scorer. He's not going to knock down 8 threes.
And a lot of times his passes aren't anything spectacular. They're just normal passes.
But I think they're better than normal.
Well, no, I'm just saying in the terms of Steve Nash made 4 or 5 wow plays a game just with his sheer passing. Rubio is not on that level. That's all I'm trying to say.
I think Rubio does a really good job of forcing the defense to think he's doing one thing and then finding a guy for an open shot. The amount of open shots they're getting is mind-boggling. I mean, number 2 in the NBA in wide open shots, 28th last year. Number 1 in assists, they were 20th last year. That is such, I mean, this really stood out to me about Rubio. We talk about Baines, we talk about Booker. A lot of people didn't want Rubio because they wanted the big, flashy, splashy name in D'Angelo Russell. It's true. Everybody wanted the big name. Like, oh, I want the guy that could go score. They don't need a guy that could score. Ricky Rubio can have an unbelievable effect on this game without scoring. He doesn't have to score. They got other scorers. They got plenty of scorers. And the reason why you're having all these other scorers is because of Ricky Rubio.
Yeah.
Because there's so many easy baskets throughout the course of a game that guys weren't getting in previous years with the Suns.
And that's the key with this whole thing, is that Ricky Rubio is a true facilitator. He's a true NBA point guard in a league now that is moving away from position-style basketball. Everyone now can handle the ball. Everyone now can shoot the three. Ricky Rubio is a little bit of an old-school feel, where he is a true NBA point guard. And let's be real, if it was D'Angelo Russell or one of those other point guards that a lot of other Suns fans wanted out there, I don't think we're seeing Aaron Baines at the level that we're seeing. I don't think we're seeing Frank Kaminsky, as I know he doesn't play a lot with Rubio, but now that he's started to work his way back, a lot of these guys, Devin Booker, we would not see the same fruits of our labor here that we are this season if it was a different point guard than Ricky Rubio.
It's an unbelievable concept, right? I mean, you put 5 guys on the court, they can all shoot, pass, and dribble the ball. Wow! Boy, that's good. Boy, that worked well. You have 5 guys on the court. They could shoot, they could pass, they could dribble. Pretty good concept to have.
Yeah.
Leads to victories.
Monty Williams on with Doug and Wolf this morning was talking about his philosophy and his scheme as it pertains to Ricky Rubio and that offense.
Well, we talk about 3 things all of the time. It's competing, defending, and sharing the ball. And so when we don't play with a high level of force, you don't see our guys flying around the floor, because sometimes effort can trump scheme. You know, you can mess up a pick and roll coverage, but have great effort and still have a chance to make a play. When the ball stops for us, in reference to sharing the ball, that's another indicator that we're not playing our style. And the defense is just something that, you know, we've played played against really good teams, and it's been great for us.
You know what's so refreshing about this through 11 games compared to the past previous seasons?
What?
There is a style that we already know 11 games into the season, even before 11 games. We knew a handful of games in. This is the new Phoenix Suns style of basketball, and if they run it correctly, they can be successful. What was the style of Igor Kokoshkov? What was the style of Jay Triano?
There was none.
There was no
style. You know, the other thing is no identity. What you want to have with the team is an identity. How do they play, right? Okay, style and style and identity can go in. A lot
hand
of the same
hand.
Thing. Yeah, it's the identity. How are you going to play? So that way, I could give you blinders. Not blinders, but I could put a different color uniform on these guys and put a hair wig on them, and you watch them play, and you could be like, oh, that's the Phoenix Suns. They're running the Philly offense, and boy, look at the hustle on defense. Look at the way they play. Look at the ball movement. Look at the centers taking three-pointers from the top of the key. You watch the way they move without the ball. You watch the way they play. You watch the ball movement. You watch the backdoor cuts. You watch the threes. It's an identity. And after a while, I think that most fans out there that are diehard Phoenix Suns fans will understand this. If I put a different uniform on these guys in a wig and you didn't know who they are and you watch them play, be like, oh, that's the Suns. Yeah, that's the Suns. Because that's their identity. And that's what Monty's trying to establish, the identity. Part of that identity is what he said. Effort sometimes can track. Effort can trump, you know, talent sometimes. So yeah, other teams can have more talent, but your effort can overcome that sometimes, not all the time. But if you give the effort on a regular basis, you're going to have a chance to upset some teams that are more talented than you. So we're seeing this with Monty. We're seeing an effort, we're seeing a style, we're seeing an identity, and we're seeing Ricky Rubio very quietly transforming the Phoenix Suns. David Johnson, how much will he play? How much should he play? We'll talk about that next on 98.7 FM, Arizona's sports station. And I heard Bickley and Murata talking about this earlier on the show with David Johnson. Look, we're going to figure this thing out one way or another. I mean, we could talk about it to a blue in the face. The proof's going to be in the pudding. I mean, either he's going to produce or he's not going to produce. I mean, that's it. I mean, we can sit there and debate this all day long. What's he going to do? How many carries? Listen, if he can help that team win football games, they're going to use him. And if he can't, they're not. Because their goal is to win football games. And if we sit there and we get to the end of the season and he hasn't been able to contribute, he doesn't show anything, well, then we know. I mean, you know. I mean, week by week, the more weeks that go by to where David Johnson doesn't contribute, the further that 2016 season is.
Well, and that's the thing. Don't we already kind of know?
I mean, I think so.
Unless he goes off and does something magical over the all next right. six games, David Johnson is a shell of his former self. I mean, there's no ifs, ands, or buts about
okay,
it.
Okay, I want to. I'm going to use a comparison, and it may not be perfect, but I think some people will understand it because it's a boxing comparison. Mike Tyson, after he was great, right after he lost to Buster Douglas and the fights with Donovan Razor Ruddock. There was still the belief that every time he went out there in the ring that he was going to kill somebody. He was going to knock him out in the first round.
Yeah.
Because we spent years and years and years watching Mike Tyson knock guys out in the first round or the second round or the third round. And we saw him be the heavyweight champion. And then towards the end of his career, those last 5 years, we still watched him because there was, man, we know what you were capable of. We know that you're able to knock guys out in the first round. And you were waiting to see it. And then when it didn't happen, it was like, oh, okay. But the next time he fights, you would buy the fight and you'd be ready to see Mike Tyson fight again. I think because David Johnson had one of the great years that any players ever had for the Cardinals in 2016, there's still that belief that, well, I saw him do it just a couple of years ago. Like, he's capable of doing it. So I think that there's kind of that Mike Tyson effect. But Mike Tyson never did it. Like, he was like, he wasn't capable of doing it anymore. So, but because you've done it, there's the belief that you're capable of doing it.
So using as best of your memory as you can, how long did it take before you finally got over that feeling where you weren't expecting Mike Tyson to win every time he stepped in the ring? Because for me, I think I'm already at that point with David Johnson.
Probably, I mean, 5 or 6 or 7 fights? I mean, after that, I would think.
Okay, so using that,
5 or 6, maybe 7.
The
lost to Buster Douglas in 90. came back with, you know, came back, had the two tough fights with Donovan Ruddick, beat Peter McNeely and Buster Mathis and Frank Bruno. But then he lost to Holyfield both times. And then you still, like, the Francis Botha fight and the Lou Savarese fight, he knocked him out. The Andrew Gallata fight, the Lennox Lewis. Like, there was all these fights that you kept watching him and thinking that he was going to be great, and he wasn't. He wasn't the great fighter that we remembered. Now, people are looking at David Johnson like, I know he's capable of being great. He was in 2016. Where did it go? It's got to be there. It's got to be there in his heart. It's got to be in his head. It's got to be somewhere. Maybe it's gone. Maybe it's gone and it'll never come back. But you're always sitting there watching because you still believe. You still believe he's capable of that.
General Manager Steve Keim was on with Doug and Wolf this morning, and they asked him, do you know what is wrong with David Johnson?
Well, I think the biggest issue is, you know, when you look at the season totality, you know, David has done some good things. I mean, look at the Cincinnati game and the catch down the sidelines and some of the other things, the Atlanta game, you know, catching the football still is to me, his strength. But I think the area that we would all agree on is the lack of consistency. And there's no doubt that needs to improve. And usually where players have issues is a consistency area. And that's only something David can fix.
So just trying to eliminate reasons why, David Johnson today was asked, during this stretch where you have struggled, are you healthy? Have you been injured at all?
Yeah, just a bad game. Just a bad game, you know. Not everyone's perfect. And the biggest thing is what you do after a bad game.
So he makes it sound
bad
like
bad game or bad season?
Well, it's been a bad season.
Okay, bad game is okay, but, you know, David Johnson is on pace this year to rush for 483 yards.
Well, not only that.
He's getting dumped by anybody who has fantasy football. You're not playing him. You have him on your team.
I benched him.
You benched him?
I had to.
Right.
Could
you even trade him right now?
No.
No.
I don't believe so.
David Johnson is projected to have 483 yards rushing, 517 yards receiving. If you add that up, this is pretty interesting. If you add up the amount of yards he's projected to have rushing and receiving, the total is 1,000 yards. 517 and 483 is 1,000, if I'm doing math correctly on the fly.
I think you are.
David Johnson with a total of 1,000 yards?
Well, that's the thing.
A total.
Even looking at some of the individual games this year, there have only been four games this season where David Johnson has had over 100 yards of total offense, rushing and receiving. Only four games.
I'll put it another way. If he does go out and have a good game, I mean, I can't declare that he's back. I mean, I need to, like what Keim just said, like, let's see it consistently. You're going to have to prove it to me a couple times in a row to believe that he's back.
Well, let's
be real. If he has a really good game, do you play him in fantasy football the next week, or
No. You
still have your doubts?
No, I've been scorned too many times now. I need to have the inverse of it. That's a valid point, and that's a great question, is that if David Johnson, which, to be brutally honest, I have no faith in him actually producing at the 2006 level or even anywhere close to that the rest of the season.
But he doesn't have to produce at that level to be effective.
So I guess that's the next big question. What can David Johnson do to simmer down the Cardinal fan base that's calling for his head right now? I don't think there really is anything unless he goes out and has monumental type games.
I think it starts with just being aggressive. It's the runs that are pissing people off. Run. Like, go, run. What are you doing?
And that's
why do you sit? Go.
Because that's the other thing. It's not like Drake and Edmonds have been filling up the stat sheet this season, but you can tell.
Edmonds had one great game and Drake had a great game.
Yeah, but I'm just saying, you can tell, even without looking at the stats, those two run differently than David Johnson. They're running harder than David Johnson. Regardless of what the numbers tell you, the eye test tells you that those two guys look different than the way David Johnson is performing.
Last year, and he had a bad year last year, David Johnson had 940 rushing and 446 receiving. That's like 1,400 yards total.
But you know what made
this year he's on pace for 1,000 total.
Maybe you hit on something here. Maybe the difference for David Johnson is not having Mike McCoy having him run up the middle every time. Maybe that's the difference. No Mike McCoy. I want to play this cut for you. Kingsbury today saying that David Johnson this week had his best practice of the season.
He's responded well. He's had the best week of practice he's had, and been proud of his effort and his focus, and I like where his head's at.
So who's going to be the starting running back on Sunday against the 49ers?
It'll be by committee. You know, both guys will have packages and do certain things, and we've talked to them about that. So that's how it'll go on Sunday.
And it should be by committee. It should be by committee until David Johnson proves something to say that he deserves to have the number one spot back.
I would committee to me means, you know, these guys are sharing it almost. I'm to me, Kenyon's my number one running back, and David Johnson, until Chase Edmonds comes back, is my number two. And when Chase comes back, then David's my number three. And I'll use David in the passing game because he could be effective that way. So I'm still going to get something out of him. That's how I'll use him. But to me, it's Kenyon Drake's got to be your number one guy. Because Kenyon Drake is, you know, he had that one good. I want to see, because I need to decide if I'm going to keep Kenyon Drake.
He plays harder than David Johnson. And I know it's been a short period of time, but he plays harder than David Johnson. And in all honesty, that would be a fascinating hypothetical. If Chase Edmonds is ready to go during this whole period of time, what does David Johnson's role look like then?
Kyler Murray is the best in the league, the entire NFL, at one thing. We'll tell you what that is next on 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station.